Hi, everybody. I'm Larry Jacobs. Hey, it's the 18th of May, 2021. We got a real treat for you today. We've got the Commissioner of the State of the Education Commissioner of the State of Alaska, Dr. Michael Johnson, with us today, calling us, I assume, from Juneau. And we're going to have a wonderful conversation about all the things that have happened over the past year, how he manages in such a large state and so diverse, okay, and what the plans are for the future. As you know now, Education Talk Radio is part of the American Consortium for Equity in Education. That's over at ACE, ACE-ED.org, the American Consortium for Equity in Education. We archive all of our podcasts there, as we will with this one, again, ACE-ED.org. We invite you to go over, review our online journal. It's there for the reading. It's called Equity and Access, and you'll love what we do. We're the only ones that focus on those two areas all the time. Well, our podcasts, all kinds of other information about nationally equity, nationally access, et cetera, inclusion, diversity, all those things that matter to school districts. Join with us. It's all free over at ace-ed.org. All right, I live in Maine, as everybody knows, and now I'm going about 4,000 miles away, okay, over to Juneau, which is one of my favorite places. Dr. Johnson, are you there? My name's Larry, and it's a pleasure to have you here.
Hi, Larry. I'm here, and you can call me Michael.
I will call you Michael, and thank you for saying that. I appreciate it. First of all, what time is it? It's noon here. What time is it in Juneau?
It is 8 a.m. in Juneau.
Okay, cool. I'm glad I didn't get you up at 6 a.m., okay? So I appreciate it. And how is life in my – one of my – I love it there, Franklin Street. Oh, man, do I remember that place so well. I spent a week there one time. How's life in Juneau these days?
Like everywhere else, it's been an interesting year. Juneau looks a lot different than it does on a typical year. Today happens to be a beautiful sunny day, so I don't know if you got any sunny days when you were here, but it's absolutely beautiful today. But normally, on May 18th, there's massive cruise ships that dock here and thousands of people walking up and down Franklin Street, as you noted. And that has not happened. It didn't happen last year, and it hasn't happened yet this year. And so that's a big difference.
Right. It really is. And by the way, just so you know, I'm very proud of this. I flew into Juneau, and me and a buddy spent a week in Juneau just having a great time meeting people, talking to people. This was about 15 years ago, and it's just a wonderful town. I just loved it. Okay, and Alaska, by the way, is the last frontier. Michael, I am a firm believer in Frederick Jackson Turner, the historian, that the frontier shapes American character. And Alaska is the last frontier. Okay, and that's why it's such an important state besides all the wonderful things in it. So you live in a great place. I envy you. I live all the way across the world. Do you have any questions about lobsters or anything?
Not off the top of my head, but Larry, I'm glad you got to visit Alaska. You said, it's a unique place, and I think, everybody that has the opportunity should come here at least once, go up in the interior and just see how different it is than the rest of America, really.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more. It's really something, and I'm glad you are with us, okay? Ever since that Russian escapade, I'm glad you're with us, okay, since 1867, okay? It's really, really good, or whatever that was that you're here. Michael, you've been commissioner for, I think, 5 years now, am I correct?
Yep, it'll be 5 years in July 1st, that's right.
Well, congratulations with that. Is that an appointed position or elected in Alaska? How's it work?
So it's in Alaska, it's appointed by the state board. The governor can basically veto the appointment and say, go back and, keep looking, pick somebody else. But it's appointed by the state board and then approved by the governor.
Right. And I must just going to ask this question right off the bat. I looked today, and Juneau to Nome is about 1,000 miles by air. All right? That's like having a state from where I live in Maine down to Georgia, one state, okay? Everybody can think about that for a second. And as you look at your diverse community, and we'll talk about COVID in a minute, but Juneau, Nome, up to Fairbanks, all the way up to Pribilof. I mean, how does it all come together? How do you manage it? Talk to me about that.
Yeah, that's a great question, Larry. It's one of the unique parts of my position as commissioner. I have meetings with the other state chiefs, the CCSSO, and other organizations, and my colleagues can drive around most of their states, in a day or two. And when I leave my office in Juneau to go visit a school in Nome, it's like flying across two-thirds of the country.
That's right.
So Alaska, if you stretch it out, it's like having schools in Miami all the way to Billings, Montana, in between.
Wow.
But like my colleague, for example, let's say, New York or Illinois. So let's take New York. You can fit about, you said you're in Maine, right? You can fit 19 Maines into Alaska. You can fit about 12 New York states in Alaska. And yet in New York, they have about 800 school districts. We have 54. New York has about 356 times the population per square mile than Alaska. We have districts the size of Indiana that has 2,000 students in it. So it's geographically, it's just spread out. Island, the state education chief could drive around Rhode Island easy in a day. 425 Rhode Islands fit in Alaska.
Oh, my Lord. That's funny. I hadn't even thought about that one, the combination of Rhode Island versus of Rhode Island versus Alaska. I mean, and both have chief state school officers, same responsibility, but look at the difference. I mean, it's just amazing, and all this has to be managed and managed so well. And how often would you get, to Nome? In your 5 years, have you been there every year? Can you get around to the 54 every year?
Yeah, no. So I have, I haven't kept track. I've probably been to Nome every year. Secretary DeVos came up, and we went to Nome while she was here, and then I've been to Nome other times. They have a really innovative career and technical program out there that's a program with several districts. But I don't know if I've been to all 54 school districts. We have about 505 schools in the state. But as you can imagine, some of them many of them you can only get to by plane or boat. And so I would probably need to be commissioner for many, many years to get to all of them. It takes, going to Nome, I have to get on a jet, fly from Juneau to Anchorage, get on another jet, and fly to Nome. And then if I go to any of the outlying schools, then I get Larry, one year I went to graduation in a little place called Scammon Bay, all the way out on the west coast of Alaska. I got in a plane, flew to Anchorage, got on another plane, flew from Anchorage to a little village called St. Mary's, got in a truck, drove 17 miles down a dirt road to a little dirt airstrip, got on a Cessna, and flew about an hour and landed in Scammon Bay and went to graduation and left, got back to the plane, and started the trip back.
Good for you. I'll tell you, that effort, it makes all the difference. And it's like I said, it's so hard to manage. I have to tell you this. I actually had him on the show, on this podcast, maybe 5 years ago. It was a gentleman, and I'm pretty sure it was down in the Kodiak Islands, and I met him at a conference. And he said he teaches in the Kodiak Islands. And he says, I asked him what he taught. And he said, K-12. And I said, I know that, but what do you teach? And he goes, K-12. He was the only teacher in a school for whatever group it was on the Kodiak Islands, K-12. And he had gone to Florida for a conference. So, I mean, it's just amazing when you hear about these things. It's just, and he loved his job. What can I tell you?
It's, you know, we have schools that are not unlike the one-room schoolhouses of while back in the lower state. And there's one or two teachers there, maybe a couple of staff. But let me tell you, the sense of community in some of those small places is absolutely incredible.
Absolutely.
It's what I imagine America was like back at the beginning. And we are a proud part of America, and I think we have a unique perspective of community that really shows how important community is to a great education.
Yeah, go back to what I said at the beginning. It has to – America's character is shaped by places like Alaska, okay? It has been, all right? And that's my theory, and it's not mine. It's Frederick Jackson Turner, the historian. I mean it. It's really something people have to experience. They do. You have a far-flung education, and I know everyone wants in-person education all the time, but we just got off the most insane year ever, the COVID year, all right, or the COVID year and a half, if I may. Talk about the pandemic. And, Michael, if you can, talk about it in two different ways. How did Alaska react, both rural and its urban areas, like Anchorage and Fairbanks, okay? How did it react in comparison to those? And how did it react technologically? Because you folks have this challenge all the time of distance, and we're going to talk about this. It's hard to get a great teacher into Scammon Bay, if I may, okay, a great physics teacher. They may not have access to one, but technologically, we may be able to get them one and connect on the net. So talk about the experience of COVID, how it shaped this year, and how it's going to shape next year. And that's a big thing. I'll give you another doctorate if you can do that, Blake. Okay? Go ahead.
Okay, Larry. Well, I'll do my best.
Yeah, by the way, the doctorate will come from the University of Larry. I wouldn't tell the state board about it, so just go from there.
Well, from what I understand, that's one of the elite schools in the country. So
it is. It's an Ivy. Yeah, I don't want to brag. It's an Ivy. But, yeah, we're in New England, so it's an Ivy. But go ahead. Talk about all this. COVID must have been, wow, talk what it was like and what you're planning. Go.
Yeah, so I'll start, and then you can redirect me if I get too far off. But, you know, in Alaska, when you think about it, I'm glad you asked the question, Larry. It shows that you understand Alaska. You know, how did it happen in the urban areas and the rural areas? Because they're so different. And unlike other parts of the country, they're separated in a way. There's no roads. You know, we have, though we're a huge state, we have some of the, you know, probably in the country, the fewest miles of road. And so you can only fly to get to some of the rural areas. So you would think that, you know, okay, great. They're isolated. They're in a village. The pandemic's not going to be that bad for them. Except once a case happens in a village, we had villages that had to go on total lockdown because once it gets in an isolated community like that, then it just runs rampant through the community.
Yep.
Alaska, in some ways, so last January, or no, was it last January of 2020?
Yeah, two Januaries ago, yeah.
If I remember correctly, the governor and I flew up to Hope, Alaska, which is way up in the northwest corner. And while we were on that trip, at some point, he got a call from the State Department saying, we need to get some folks out of Wuhan, China. They're going to land and refuel in Anchorage. And so our conversations about COVID started then, like, is this going to be a danger to our state? How do we contain this? What's going to happen? That flight came and landed. They set up a special containment area, and then it went on and I think landed in California, and they quarantined those folks for a while. We never stopped. I mean, from that time forward, the Governor Dunleavy started having pretty much weekly, if not more often, meetings about, okay, how are we going to respond to this? And started monitoring and tracking and dealing with it. So Alaska, in some ways, got a head start on some of it. We our response has been great in terms of the state and our chief medical officer. We've had, you know, one of the lowest death rates, and
yeah,
our vaccination rates have been really high. In terms of the schools, tribal health has played an incredibly powerful role in keeping many of our schools open. They have been fantastic, the tribal health network in the state. And so we had, in rural areas, some schools that never closed. They were able to be open all year. Our urban areas, so Anchorage, Fairbanks, Juneau, somewhat the Kenai, were the places that had the most trouble opening and keeping kids in school. I haven't yet fully evaluated how much of that was politics in those communities and how much of it is just the practical nature. Look, I mean, it should be no surprise that it's harder to manage a pandemic when you have more people concentrated in a smaller area than you do in rural areas. And so, you know, those communities worked hard at it, but it was a lot harder to get school open than it was in some of our other places.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Where do you think we are now in Alaska with all this? And everybody's talking, and I always use it's my favorite quote these days. Okay, we call it learning loss, but I'm not so sure learning was lost. I think curriculum was lost. All right, and you can't mix up the two. Where are we now? Do you think, if you had to just do an overview, how do we make up for what we need to make up for, if we need to make up for anything, Michael? What do you think?
Yeah, that's a great question, and maybe I'll try to tie in the technology question you asked before also.
Yeah, please. I don't want to lose track of that. Yeah.
I think, you know, the challenge of that question, Larry, is that it's not going to be the same for every student. And so the reality is we do have to make up for many of our students. They missed a lot of learning opportunity. For others, they didn't miss as much learning opportunity. And here's the other complexity. And you can't draw that line between the ones that were in school and out of school. Some students that weren't in-person learning, their families created robust learning opportunities. In Alaska, because of our geography, we've had decades of experience of distance learning. And so 23% of our kids this past year enrolled in public homeschool programs by choice. So that's almost a quarter of our students enrolled in homeschool programs that long before the pandemic had expertise in distant learning. So some of those kids had really rich, wonderful opportunities. Other kids that were in school for most of the year but were out for a week here or a week there, whatever, because of various outbreaks, they may have missed more learning opportunities than some of the students that never even went to in-person learning this year. So it's a complex question, but I think how we make up for it is leveraging some of the expertise we had before the pandemic. And so we have, like you mentioned, we have students in rural isolated areas that, you know, they only have two or three teachers in their school, K-12.
Yep.
So they're not going to
yep.
have a physics teacher and a biology teacher and a math teacher. Excuse me. They're going to have to rely on the internet, distant learning for access to those kind of courses. And so I think that's also how we make up for it. And then the last thing I would say is I think this is a unique and wonderful opportunity to really connect with our tribes who often have summer culture camps and those kind of experiences. I think that would be amazing ways for kids to make up some of the loss.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting what you just said, and you've been faced with this challenge of, if I may, literal distance learning since the get-go, all right? And it seems to me, and you talk to all your fellow, you know, your other 49 chief state school officers, I know you're in contact with them. The show was set up by the Council of Chief State School Officers. I forgot to mention that. Thank you all over there. Okay? And you're all in contact with each other. And it seems to me, Michael, that the other states can learn a lot from Alaska right now. I mean, everybody all of a sudden got in the same boat that Alaska's been in for years. Okay? And now I'm not talking about the horrors of the disease. I'm talking about the challenge of distance learning. All right? Have they tapped into your expertise and your state's expertise? You guys know how to do it.
Well, first of all, I'd say I learn tons from my colleagues. CCSSO.
I bet you do. I know a lot of them. They're great. They're all great.
Yes.
I think they're terrific.
CCSSO just does a fantastic job of connecting us all, keeping us connected, and making sure that when we're connected, we're talking about the things that really impact our students. And so throughout the pandemic, we have had regular meetings that CCSO set up, and I have listened and learned from so many of my colleagues, listened to a couple of your podcasts
with colleagues
at CCSO and, you know, how they handled the pandemic. So I learned from them. But we do sometimes have conversations about how we use technology, distant learning, how we set up those sorts of programs. And I think, you know, in a way that public education hasn't done before, we've had to connect with and rely on families for the delivery of instruction over this past year. And Alaska has, decades of experience doing that. And, there is such rich opportunity for a education full of great content by doing that.
It's really something. I must ask, what about, this was a common challenge across the board, broadband. I mean, we'll use Nome again. Everybody knows Nome is way in the west of Alaska. Okay. Broadband. How is broadband across the state? Are you able to take full advantage of it in terms of education? You know what I mean? Yeah.
Right, yeah. Broadband is a frequent topic in Alaska, and, it's developed rapidly over the last number of years, but we still have pockets in Alaska, big areas compared to the lower 48,
yeah,
that don't have good connectivity. You know, we have one district that, they're still using microwave transmit, and so it takes the speeds are really low. I mean, we're talking almost dial-up or worse, and a lot of people in America can't remember what that was like. And we still have areas like that. It's progressing, though. In the last few years, a project called Quintillion ran a fiber optic cable across the north of Alaska and down the western side, which has really increased connectivity over there. But the other issue is, you know, you go to many of our rural areas, Larry, and there's no the homes in those villages are not wired. They don't have internet in the home, so the school may be the only place, and the download speeds are so slow that, you know, we have kids that will go and, you know, to the school or sit on the porch of the school or whatever to upload or download coursework, that sort of thing. But the governor just announced a task force on broadband to make sure that all the federal money that's coming to the state focused on broadband, that we maximize that to increase our broadband in area. And then the final thing I'd say, Larry, is, it's incredibly expensive. One of our districts spends about $22 million a year in broadband for not that many schools, but that's how much it costs in a rural, isolated area off the road system.
Right. It is. The challenges you folks have are just so unique. And I'm curious about something else, and I would bet a lot of people are curious as this as well. Huge state, huge rural area. As you look at the students today, all right, and we all want them, we always use that phrase, college and career ready and all that sort of thing, but we're talking about a big state, okay? Where does I don't want to phrase this. Where do we see the kids going? Is there a lot of action to get into the colleges, community colleges, et cetera? Well, you know, we've got terrible skills shortage out there. Where are the kids in terms of where they need to be for the future, their future in Alaska? How do you look at that? It's an odd question, but I have to ask it. But I don't know if it's any different from any of the lower 48. I honestly God don't.
Yeah, so, you know, it's a great question, Larry. I'll start maybe a little less positive and then go positive. Here's where are kids at in terms of their futures. Alaska has very poor education outcomes. And, you know, one message that I've tried to be consistent with as commissioner is that we as a state have to be so dissatisfied with the outcomes that we're getting that we'll do whatever it takes to improve them. We're, on the last NAEP, we're 50 out of 50 when it comes to fourth grade reading. That should disturb us in such a way that we will do whatever it takes to improve those outcomes for kids. And so in some ways, we are greatly challenged in terms of preparing kids for their future because our outcomes are so low and we can't accept it. We can't not admit it. We can't hide it. We can't gloss over it. We can't just shrug our shoulders and move on. We have to be disturbed by it, and I'm going to keep saying that to our state over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm. You're right.
On the other hand, though, there is no reason. When you consider the lifestyle and the character that you open this podcast talking about, that our kids live with in this state and in their community, there is no reason they should not be at the top of this country when it comes to outcome and achievement. And,
absolutely.
You know, I hope we're moving in the right direction. We are prioritizing reading, and we're prioritizing CTE. We have some really innovative career and technical programs in the state where kids go for like 2 or 3 week intensive sessions. So they leave their rural communities. They go to a program like there's one in Nome, and they go there for 2 or 3 weeks. Just an amazing program out there that has various CTE programs. They partner with various industries. Caterpillar, for example, installed simulators out there where you can I love it. I love to go there and Doug, the principal there, lets me sit on those simulators and drive big, huge dump trucks that I'll never be able to drive in real life.
But
it's really real. Those kids are getting some great opportunity, and then they live out in the most amazing country and have great opportunity. So, you know what, we have our challenges, but there is absolutely no reason with programs like that we can't get our kids outperforming many other places.
Absolutely, and I'll say it, you know, obviously the students there are the folks that are just as intelligent as everybody else in the world. Okay, and they have to understand there's a big world, and there's a lot of opportunity just where they live. And these days, you can make it anywhere. You know, if I can make it here, I make it anywhere. But it's the truth, okay? And we just got to keep giving those kids the opportunity. Michael, I have to ask you, and there's always another challenge with you and the great state of Hawaii, your kind of late-coming companion there in the late 50s, okay? Teacher retention, teacher recruitment. Okay, and I know the teachers you have now are excellent, but what's going on with that?
Yeah, great question. So you're right. We import in any given year, you know, the new teachers that are hired, we import about 2/3 of them. And
from the lower 48 or like from when you say you import them from where? From the lower 48 or Canada or what?
Yeah, and I mean, we even have a cadre of teachers coming over from the Philippines.
I was going to ask you that.
And,
yeah, that's great. That's great.
Yeah. And, you know, we could spend a whole show just talking about that issue because when you think about the indigenous culture that these folks go into, you know, many of them stay 1 year or 2 years. They're just not prepared for the cross-cultural experience that is so unique to rural Alaska. First of all, you fly up from Alabama great teacher, great person, great character, but you go from Birmingham and fly up to Alaska and are excited about this wonderful Alaskan adventure, but then winter sets in and it's 40 below. And
welcome
it's
to Maine.
Dark.
Yeah.
It's dark all but, you know, 3 hours of the day. And if you're not prepared for that, you don't stay long. So we just completed a teacher retention and recruitment study. The governor conventioned it. And what we did is we looked for root causes. We surveyed 4,000 or more teachers in the state. We did interviews. We did all sorts of things to try to come up with the root causes of why folks don't stay and why we can't recruit more. And there's a lot there, but one thing I'll say is for us to tackle this challenge, we need to attract more Alaska Natives, Alaska citizens to become teachers in our state. And that's one thing we're going to be really focused on.
How's that? And I must ask this, and people would be interested in this. We're talking to educators. What's the pay scale? I mean, is it higher than, well, you mentioned Alabama here in Maine, wherever. But how's it compare?
Yeah, you know, I don't have any specifics in front of me.
It used to compare.
We used to be near the top. I do know the last time I looked, we're more toward the middle of the country now. So it's not as, pay is not as attractive as it used to be. Our benefits up here are, we usually have really good benefits compared to some other places in the country.
Oh, interesting.
But they're very expensive. You know, there are health care up here is very, very expensive.
Yeah, well, it's very rural. It's hard to do. So do we look, and you mentioned Alabama. Let's use Alabama. There's a great physics teacher in Alabama. I'm just using physics. They're hard to find anyway. All right? And there's districts in Alaska that can't find a great physics teacher. All right? This person is available. Can we? Are you looking at online education to hook into that person? How's that working? To get that person up to those students? Because those students need that same physics teacher. Why should they be deprived?
Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's an interesting question. We, when the pandemic hit, we formed a partnership with Florida Virtual School it was kind of a three-part contract, but the initial part was just for the first few weeks that, okay, this sudden change to remote learning, if families wanted to sign up for courses, they could do that. The union really pushed back on the idea that teachers outside of Alaska would be teaching Alaska students. So what we've done over the last year is, our second part of that contract was to train Alaska teachers to use the Florida Virtual Platform, and that went really well. We had initially planned to train about 50, and I think there was 200 or more teachers signed up and went through that training, and we got great feedback. But having said that, we have teachers in Alaska that teach, like we have a teacher up in Kotzebue, and her classroom is a small little room, got big monitors in front of her, a green screen behind her, and she teaches classes all around that whole region up.
That's great.
Students in several villages in a class. And it's amazing how those kids connect with each other and do projects and that sort of thing. And so we do that in state with teachers now. We have
That makes perfect sense. And of course it makes perfect sense. And your union, may be right that there has to be a certain relevance to the person's culture to make it work in Alaska. I don't know, but that is terrific to know that someone in Juneau, a great physics teacher, can be teaching somebody up in Kotzebue or vice versa. I mean, it's just great.
Right.
It's perfect.
And they're not wrong that, look, if
That makes sense. Like what we said at the beginning.
Our preference should be somebody that lives up here in those communities that know the kids and their lifestyle and whatever. So they're not wrong about that. And
no, they aren't.
But like
I don't
some
think.
Of our service providers for special ed and others, we almost have to tap into outside resources for some of those.
Yeah.
But we have some great examples of some fantastic teachers that are teaching very effectively in multiple communities at one time.
Oh, that is great to hear. That is well, that is so good. My last words of advice: every one of your high schools has a career fair. Make sure they have someone from University of Alaska's education school, and encourage kids at the career fair to become teachers in Alaska. Okay, because the kids only know their own teachers; they don't know there's a whole world of opportunity in education for them, and we need them. Okay, there's always a booth for the firefighters, bless their hearts, and the veterinarians and the nurses. We need one for teachers, too, at the career fair.
Absolutely, Larry. And we have a great Educators Rising chapter up here that does a lot of that. But, hey, here's you could help me with this. So we have all these shows on TV like Alaska Cops, Alaska Coast Guard, or whatever. Why can't we get somebody to do a show on Alaska teaching? Because
it's just
amazing to come up here and live. And I think a lot of people watch it. What do you think?
Yeah, what was I watching? Where the guy, I guess it's at Fairbanks, Alaska Real Estate, or I can't remember the name of the Alaska Cabins. I remember I was watching that show just a few weeks ago. Okay, about the cost of real estate in Fairbanks and what people are buying, etc. You're absolutely right. Okay, and I'm telling you, it's just a great place. It's just a great place, and I think people should really look at it. And kids should really look at it. Go do some recruiting. We'll help you any way we can. You know that it's important to us. Okay. To get you on board. Go see what we're doing, Michael, over at our ace-ed.org, our equity consortium. Maybe you can do an article for us about teaching in Alaska. That would be a fun article to have. And we put it out there. The magazine goes to an awful lot of people.
That'd be great, Larry. Yeah, it's a great website.
I'm going to send you an email on you and Grant, okay, your PR guy. And we'll get that together. We would love to have that article. What a fun thing, and it might help you to encourage people to go up there.
That's fantastic. Thank you.
Well, believe me, my pleasure. Okay? Absolutely, it's my pleasure. All right? So look for an email. You and Grant, look for an email from me. Okay? I'll get it to you today. We got to go. Keep up the good work, my friend, and stay safe. I think the worst is behind us. And use what we learned to move everything forward up there. It's a great place. It's a great place.
Well, Dave.
And you
Thanks
know
for
what?
The opportunity.
Yeah, and I can't imagine Franklin Street completely empty. It's hard. It must be awfully hard on the storekeepers and everything. They were so dependent on the cruise ships and all. But I'll tell everybody, it really is a great place, and I hope those cruises come back real soon. Are they coming back this year? What they must be. Are they? What's going on with cruising? I don't even know.
You know what? Hope so, but nothing definitive yet. It's getting a little bit late in the season, so if something doesn't clear up soon in terms of the guidance or whatever the rules, then it's going to be difficult to get any this year. But there's what I've heard is there's a lot of folks flying to Alaska this summer and just going to do road trips, renting RVs and that sort of thing. That doesn't help Franklin Street too much. But next year when the cruise ships show up, Franklin Street will be there and be an exciting place.
And the Red Dog will be there. Is it still there, the old Red Dog?
It's still there.
All right. Give it my regards, okay? I remember the first night we were there, we were just tourists. When we showed up the next day and the day after, as well as the other places, people said, oh, you guys, who are you? And when we were there for a week, we met a lot of great people. So that's really a great town and a great state. So good luck, Michael. I'll be in touch soon. Give my regards
Thanks,
to the
Larry.
Red Dog. Put that mask on and have a burger and a beer for me, okay?
Thanks, Larry. Will do.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Everybody, Michael Johnson, who is the Dr. Michael Johnson, Commissioner of Education for the Alaska Department of Education. Wow. All I can say, thank you, Michael, and I'll be in touch on that. I love that idea for an article in the magazine. All right, we're going to archive the show, as mentioned to Michael, over at ace-ed.org, A-C-E. dash ed.org. That's our consortium for equity. My name's Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. Thanks for listening. And thank you, CCSSO, Council of Chief State School Officers.